From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Des Moines has been selected as one of 18 sites across the U.S. for an unprecedented national discussion about our country's debt. In the first half hour today, we talk with organizers of the event and find out what they hope to accomplish during the discussion. My guests are Michelle Rich of the State Public Policy Group and Carolyn Lukensmeyer, Director of America Speaks. Then in our second half hour, State Senator Joe Bolcom. He's back from a bike trip across the country of Slovenia. His mission? Learn about that country's efforts to reduce energy consumption. That's all coming up this noon hour, right after a look at the news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Des Moines has been selected as one of only 18 sites for an unprecedented national discussion on the national debt. It's called America Speaks, Our Budget, Our Economy. A diverse group of local citizens will come together on Saturday, June 26th at Drake University. The local group of citizens will be linked online with 18 other sites across the country to learn about issues involved with the national debt, to weigh the options, and develop recommendations for leaders in Washington. And we want to explore this for the first half hour. Joining us to discuss the event and the national debt, Michelle Rich. She is a senior program manager at the State Public Policy Group in Des Moines. Good afternoon to you, Michelle.
Great. It's nice to be here.
Also joining us by phone, Carolyn Lukensmeyer. I hope I got your name right, Carolyn.
It's actually Lukensmeyer, Ben.
Lukensmeyer, forgive me, please. Founder and director of America Speaks, a nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to our program.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you.
Now, let's first have you each tell us about your group so that we may know over the next half hour who we're hearing these words from. Michelle, we're not so acquainted with, most of us are not acquainted with the State Public Policy Group. Tell us about the group in Des Moines.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity to be here today. State Public Policy Group is a small mission-driven consulting company based here in Des Moines. We do work across the state and in local communities in Iowa, as well as on the national and international levels. Really, the mission of SPPG is to engage Iowans and individuals in the policy discussion. So this event really is a natural fit for SPPG and we're looking forward to a great event on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And what is your relation to this event, your group's relationship to it?
Well, we were approached by America Speaks to help coordinate the event. And we've been, at the moment, we're recruiting individuals to participate on Saturday. And we have been talking with a lot of folks in the area about some of their concerns regarding the federal budget and we're just coordinating.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle, your group is nonpartisan.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Carolyn, tell us about America Speaks.
I'd be delighted to, Ben. And actually, first I'd like to let your listeners know that I'm an Iowan by birth.
Well, great. Lucky you.
Yeah, I agree. And much of my family still lives in the state. I was born in Hampton. My mom's still alive and there, and brothers in Cedar Falls and Hampton. So we are delighted to be in Iowa, and I personally have a special interest in being in Iowa.
Excellent.
But America Speaks is a nonprofit that I founded 15 years ago. Its mission is to link citizens, ordinary people, put them back at the table on policy discussions that our elected officials engage in on an ongoing basis. I think, and we hear from people all over the country, that there's just a lot of angst and even anger about the undue influence of money and special interest groups in American politics, and therefore how policies are set at the local, state, and national level. So America Speaks was built on the foundation of Jeffersonian democracy, a belief that people really can make good decisions together if they have the information, if it's factual and neutral. And if, in fact, here's a critical piece of it, Ben. In our current public life, most of us spend most of our time talking with people who think like we do. So when America Speaks creates a process, we go to great lengths, and that's why we asked Michelle's organization to be our partner in Iowa, to ensure that the group of Americans that come together represent the whole community. So we take the census data by gender, by age, by income, by race and ethnicity, and of course on something like the U.S. budget, we also have to look at the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me ask Michelle then, how many are in this local group participating in this national discussion? How did you select them? Who are they?
That's a good question. We are hoping to have 70 individuals participate on Saturday, and we're looking for a really nice cross-section of Iowans to participate, really looking for a broad spectrum of people representing all ideologies, party affiliations, ages, ethnicities, and race. So, you know, we're looking for conservatives and liberals, Republicans, Democrats, young and old to participate, around 70 individuals.
Mm-hmm. And you have not selected these people yet, it sounds like.
They do have to register online because we are looking for a representative group. We don't necessarily want the decks stacked any particular way. So they are asked to register online at usabudgetdiscussion.org.
Okay. And now what is, tell me, Carolyn Lukensmeyer, what is you hope to accomplish in this discussion? Why come together in this fashion from 18 sites joining together electronically? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, Ben, one of the key principles of our work has always been that if the public comes together like this, what matters most is that they are listened to. So we've been working for months here in Washington to get the appropriate audience with the Senate Budget Committee, the House Budget Committee, and now President Obama's commission called Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. So the goal of this on Saturday, June 26th, someplace between 3,500 and 4,000 people across these 19 cities will register their views about what areas are they willing to cut spending in. What areas might they be willing to raise taxes in to deal with the long-term deficit issue? And we will then, because of the way we use technology with computers and with keypad polling devices, we'll be able to say, this group of people all across the country feel strongly that they'd like their elected officials to take X, Y, and Z actions. And then America Speaks' role is to present that data to members of Congress and to the President's Commission.
Mm-hmm. We are reminded repeatedly about our nation's debt problem in our news. It comes up in so many news stories, is a burden to this nation, to each one of us in the back of our minds lurking there. It's not often talked about in depth. Can you tell us, Carolyn, to what extent, the extent of our national debt at the moment, where do we find ourselves when you take the politics out of the equation?
Well, Ben, the challenge is that where we sit today is a function of decades of policies. The things that have exacerbated it in recent times are the fact that we are been in two wars, the fact that for more than a decade we've been on aggressive tax cutting. But what really drives the deficit in this country and why we have to come together as a people to look at it, there are really two primary factors. One is health care costs, and the fact that they continue to be rising faster than our economy is growing. The second factor that forces this choice on us is the fact of just plain demographics, Ben. We are an aging population, as is true in all the developed world. All of Europe is facing the same challenge. Japanese are facing the same challenge. So as a larger portion of the population is retiring and not in the workforce, we don't have as many people paying payroll taxes and income taxes. So something has to shift in terms of the balance of the promises we make to people in our culture who are vulnerable for health reasons, for disability reasons, for age reasons, for retirement reasons, and the taxes we're willing to pay to support them. Mm-hmm. So that's really what drives this discussion, Ben.
Mm-hmm. So your America Speaks is in the business of public decision making about things that impact our lives. Tell us, because the debt is so big, we hear about it, but how does it affect my life, your life, our private lives presently, and how could it potentially affect it even more in the future?
Well, that is a great question, Ben. there we could look at many examples, but let me try to get very concrete. In the area of our health care, our access to doctors, the cost of a doctor's visit, because of the size of programs like Medicare and Medicaid, if we don't figure out a different formula, i.e., what are the revenues there to pay for it, what are the spending commitments that we make, we could see, and this is not immediate. This is very important, Ben. I want to come back to this because we've just been through the toughest recession, the toughest economic time since the Great Depression. And I know, I was just 2 weekends ago at home at a family reunion, and people from my childhood, people from all ages are still in very, very tough straits in the current economy. So all of the listeners on this show should know we're talking about making these decisions about deficit reduction 15 years out, 20 years out. But we need to make the policy decisions now and implement them later. Back to your question, if we don't do something about it, within a decade or a decade and a half, there'll be less dollars available from the federal government for education, less dollars available for farm subsidies, less dollars available for in the highway trust fund. So take any of those, depending on where you sit in America, the way in which our income taxes, corporate taxes, and all of the revenues of the federal government are completely marbled in to supporting the American way of life. Many people have lost track of the fact that it is, in fact, the federal government that is providing an extraordinary number of services that we've all now been blessed to have for so long that we more or less take them for granted. So the exact answer to your question is think about any of the programs or projects in your life that are linked to a federal budget. Within 10 or 15 years, if we don't make some of these tough decisions, the revenues available to fund those programs you deeply care about will have been reduced because we'll have to be paying debt on, we'll have to be paying interest on our debt.
Carolyn Lukensmeyer is the founder and director of America Speaks, a nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C., whose mission it is to reinvigorate American democracy by engaging citizens in the public decision-making that impacts our lives, and involved with America Speaks, Our Budget, Our Economy, an unprecedented national discussion taking place June 26th, Saturday, June 26th at Drake University. That's what we're talking about today. Michelle Rich is with us as well, Senior Program Manager at the State Public Policy Group in Des Moines. We have an email here. I want to have our listeners reach out to us with any with your two cents about our national debt, your thoughts on how we find a solution, bring it down. What do you want to throw into this conversation? What would your recommendation be to leaders in Washington? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're on Twitter at IPR Talk. I'll leave this quick email and get an answer after the break. Andy in Iowa City says, I think we planned that the discussion is noble, but I'm sure many good ideas, but he doubts in this political climate whether it will do any good. We'll be back in 1 minute. With the Exchange, glad to have you with us over the noon hour. Coming up in just a few minutes, State Senator Joe Bolcom will join us. He's just back from a bike trip across Slovenia. Yes, that little country that just tied us in the World Cup a few minutes ago. And he'll tell us about sharing awareness of clean energy, some experiences that he had in Slovenia. Right now, we're talking about Des Moines having been selected as one of 18 sites across the U.S. for an unprecedented discussion on national debt, the budget. America Speaks, Our Budget, Our Economy. Carolyn Lukensmeyer with us, Michelle Rich with us as well. We'd like to have you join our conversation in the next few minutes. 1-866-780-9100. Let's throw out this email from Andy in Iowa City. Andy writes, I think the planned discussion next week is noble. I'm sure many good ideas will be exchanged, but Andy writes, with the current political climate, our national leaders are incapable of putting partisan politics away to reach a common goal of addressing the national debt. What do you think, Carolyn, of Andy's skepticism about this event?
I think Andy's skepticism is very understandable, and I think many, many, I mean literally hundreds of thousands of Americans feel the same way. And Ben, it's exactly why we do what we do at America Speaks, because we have discovered that when, in fact, you know, what politicians' bread and butter is in the end is where is their public will to make the tough decisions? And the big reason why nothing ever happens on debt and deficit is he's right. There's a partisan story. The partisan story is Republicans unite against raising taxes, and the majority of Democrats unite against cutting spending. So there clearly are exceptions to that, but that is what happens in Washington. So if thousands of Americans can come together, that people in Washington, and as I told you, the Senate and House budget committees have committed to listen to these results, as has the President's Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. So let's say, a week from tomorrow on Saturday, thousands of Americans put together a package which tells Congress and the President, we want a combination of spending cuts and increasing revenues to move the nation back to a sustainable budget. I think there's a chance that message could make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So the hard choices here that we'll inevitably face, we don't get around the fact that taxes will have to be raised. Is that a given? And a given also that programs will be cut?
That is a given.
Those two are givens. Okay. Here's a Dinah from Ames talks about what percentage of the national budget is in defense, especially at a time when we're fighting two wars overseas.
That is an excellent question, which I'm going to have to look for a note on. I apologize for not having it at my fingertips, but Michelle, or if you want to ask Michelle a question, I'll find it and come right back to you.
Okay, Michelle, tell us again how people can reach out to perhaps be a part of this local citizen group that will take place in America Speak, take a part in America Speaks, Our Budget, Our Economy on June 26th.
Yeah, I wanted to reply to that email, actually. And, you know, I think it is understandable that a lot of people feel distrust at the government. They're kind of sick of these political games that they keep seeing on the national level. But I think Iowans really can't afford not to be part of this discussion. If you look at a lot of the demographics in Iowa today, we have an aging population. We're also looking to attract young people to the state as well as business. We've had a strong commitment to quality education traditionally. And then, you know, our ag economy is also a significant issue in Iowa. So I think Iowans really need to take part in this regardless of their concerns about our federal politics that are going on. But if they're interested, we certainly want them to participate on Saturday, and I think they should. USABudgetDiscussion.org is the website that they need to use to register for the event. And like I said, I don't think that Iowans can afford not to be part of the discussion.
A caller who couldn't stay with us wants to know why the discussion is limited to the federal government when the expenditures of state and local governments are also growing. Do you want to tackle that, Michelle?
Sure. This is a specific event going on. Like we said, it's a national town hall meeting. So all the sites will be linked across the country. But, you know, I do think those discussions need to occur as well. So any chance that we can get to create those opportunities in our state, I think I don't think we'll be able to avoid those discussions coming up here next January.
Carolyn, let me ask this, of course. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Well, I wanted to come back to the woman's question about the percentage of federal spending. I just had to open up the file. And Michelle already gave the website, but for all your listeners, all this information is already up on the website in a document called Federal Budget 101. But the direct answer to her question is, in the year 2010, 19.2% of the total federal budget is spent on national defense. And just to give a little bit of a comparison, that's exactly the same percent that is spent on Social Security. About 19.9% is on Medicare and Medicaid. And I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm. Let's try to squeeze in a caller before we have to say goodbye to the two of you. Kim is in Illinois. Hi, Kim.
And a happy Friday to everyone.
Happy Friday to you, Kim. What's on your mind? We've got just a couple minutes left.
Well, was just curious as to, you know, and they keep talking as far as with the budget and everything and the cuts and the this and the that. But state of Illinois, perfect example, huge debts and everything. Well, I guess I'm confused as to, like, the casinos and the lottery and all this was, you know, this extra money was supposed to go to your schools and your roadways, but yet those are where we make our first budget cuts. And then Quinn keeps talking about wanting to increase taxes on this and cut this. And to me, shouldn't we stop and look at, like, where is the money actually going? And then make the cuts as opposed to, you know, you just keep telling people, oh, you got to pay more. And then the same thing with, like, making more government jobs. I mean, how does that actually work? If the government doesn't have any money to start off with, how do we pay somebody for doing a job? And, you know, yeah, okay, we're going to get part of it back when we tax them, you know, but which then leads me to agricultural hemp as far as jobs, renewable, green.
Okay, let's quickly get a response. Kim, to your question, Michelle or Carolyn, who wants to take that?
Well, I would jump in that I think Kim is expressing something that many Americans feel, which whether it's your family budget or the state budget or the federal budget, a budget expresses people's priorities. It expresses our values. And when we have less money than we used to have, there's a strong need to review those priorities, to review those values. And that's why it's so important for Americans to come together to tell Washington, what are our priorities for federal funding? And to do the same thing in Illinois and Iowa. I think Michelle is absolutely right. It would be wonderful to do this same kind of exercise directly on the Iowa state budget or the Illinois state budget.
When we had the federal stimulus bill that passed, we saw the birth of the Tea Party. Is there a relationship at all between this discussion and the birth of the Tea Party? A lot of the things seem to match up. Tea Party activists also very worried about the budget deficit.
Well, there's no question but what that the Tea Party intensity increased because of the big spending in the stimulus package. I also think that most Americans understand that government exists to, in fact, be able to make decisions like that in time of war, in time of economic crisis. I think what the Tea Party is effectively doing is now really saying, okay, that happened, but now let's look at the other side of the ledger. How can we look in the medium term and the long term to ensure that we're not just continuing such an increase in spending without the money to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, what are some of the other cities in addition to Des Moines that are taking part in this national discussion?
Well, we're really coast to coast. Starting on the East Coast, we're in Augusta, Maine, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Richmond, Virginia, Philadelphia, Columbia, South Carolina, Jackson, Mississippi, Chicago, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, Louisville, Kentucky, Dallas, Texas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Casper, Wyoming, Missoula, Montana, Grand Forks, North Dakota, Portland, Oregon, Pasadena, California, Silicon Valley, California. Just outside Kansas City, Overton Park, Kansas.
Okay.
We try to cover all the country's different geographies and cultures, Ben.
Michelle Rich, we have just a few seconds left. Remind us again, what is this event and how can people get involved?
Yeah, Saturday, June 26th from 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., the National Town Hall will be occurring on the federal budget. We're encouraging all Iowans that are interested to participate. It's at Drake University here in Des Moines. USABudgetDiscussion.org. Please sign up, and we're looking forward to a great discussion on June 26th.
Michelle Rich, thank you very much, of the State Public Policy Group in Des Moines. Carolyn Lookensmeyer, thank you very much for joining us from Washington, D.C.
Thank you for having us, Ben, and I just want to add my voice to Michelle's. We really want every seat in Iowa to be filled.
Okay, very good. We'll be back with State Senator Joe Bolcom, back from his bike trip across Slovenia, when the exchange continues in just a few minutes. This is Iowa Public Radio News. Welcome back to the exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we shift now our focus to the tiny central European country of Slovenia, a country that touches the Alps, borders on the Mediterranean Sea. Iowa State Senator Joe Bolcom has just returned from a bike trip across Slovenia to learn about that country's clean energy initiatives. Joe Bolcom joins us this afternoon in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Senator Bolcom, Joe, welcome.
Thanks, Ben. It's good to be here.
Now, well, we're not going to talk about soccer, even though that's on a lot of the minds of our listeners, the dramatic 2-2 tie in the World Cup just a few minutes ago. Small nation, big in soccer. We're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
More than that.
They're wild about it.
You no doubt noticed World Cup fever over there, huh? Why? This was your third trip to Slovenia, I understand. Why the interest in this country and its approach to energy?
Well, this is the Green Bike Tour of 2010 went to Slovenia to learn about what progress they're making in renewable energy and also to share the progress we're making in Iowa. This is, I think, the eighth year that the Green Bike Tour, led by David Osterberg and Ed Woolsey and others, that have come together to get out and try and learn from other people about how they're addressing climate change and renewable energy production.
Mm-hmm. Why specifically Slovenia?
Well, actually, Professor Osterberg from the University of Iowa has been involved in teaching opportunities at the University of Nova Gorica the last couple of years, and he made connections over there with some of the faculty at that university to host us. And so we thought it was a good opportunity to go over and really see the progress that Slovenia is making in developing their renewable energy.
And in what capacity are you going? Who pays the bill for you, for
example? Yes, I also work at the University of Iowa Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research, and I went on this visit to Slovenia on their behalf to share our story here in Iowa about the progress we're making, especially in the area of wind. We have approximately 20% of our state's power now by wind. But to share that story and really to learn from people in Slovenia about what they're doing to address climate change, and we learned quite a lot, actually.
So over the course of 7 days, and you returned just earlier this week, you visited renewable energy sites, you met with public officials, some energy experts. Tell us about some of the highlights.
Well, Slovenia is about 2 million people. They joined the EU in 2004, so they've been drawn into working more aggressively on addressing climate change as a result of that. About a third of their power comes from hydroelectric dams, water running down rivers, about a third from nuclear power, and about a third from coal. And they're in the process of writing a national plan that would begin to see about 25% of their energy come from renewable sources. They're currently at about 15%, but they have a goal about
20. How does that compare with us?
We're about 20% renewable energy here in Iowa, mm-hmm. From looking at our total consumption. They have a goal of 25% by 2025. The areas where they're making most of their progress and the growth they see is in the area of solar power. Everywhere we went, we saw solar collectors on homes, businesses, public facilities, even at the hydro plants we visited, they had massive photovoltaic arrays. And they see really, they're about 20 megawatts of power, which is a pretty small amount, but they hope to get to 300 megawatts of power in the next 15 years or so.
Mm-hmm. So the solar power relies on photovoltaic systems. Have we made a lot of progress there? It seems to me that that has been a real sticking point, that we can't quite capture all of the energy the sun brings to us with this photovoltaic system.
Sure. We've made great progress, actually, in the area of biofuels and in the area of wind energy, mostly in the area of wind by our larger utility companies. That activity has been subsidized by the federal government with a production tax credit, and because we needed to do that is to incent that. In the area of solar, there really hasn't been much public subsidy or incentives for homeowners or businesses to move into either solar hot water heaters or photovoltaic systems that produce electricity. And in Slovenia, they have what is called a feed-in tariff that provides an incentive to a homeowner or business to make an investment in this system. And it's probably an area – we've talked about it some in Iowa as a matter of policy, but it's really finding the money, if you will, to make the same kind of subsidy we've made to these big wind farms to smaller, more distributed, more decentralized power production. And in fact, in Slovenia, they're looking at a program where they would rent the roofs of schools to entrepreneurs to essentially put up photovoltaic cells on schools because they want to maintain all their agricultural production. They don't want to take up the countryside with these systems. And so it sounds like a very innovative approach to getting more power online.
So ideally, what we know now is that it wouldn't be large photovoltaic fields. It would be distributed. We'd have them incorporated into our homes, in our backyard, and on our garages or whatever.
Precisely. And in the activity in Slovenia, I mean, they've created a lot of green jobs in the the installation and maintenance of these systems. But one of the fastest growing companies also in Slovenia is a company called Bisol, and they are a manufacturer of solar collectors. And those are the kind of jobs, I think, that the manufacturing jobs are kind of the gold standard of jobs that every state or country would like to have more of. And when you create this market for this componentry in businesses in residential settings, you create the opportunity for the manufacture of these materials close to home. Much like in the wind industry in Iowa, we have a lot of wind turbines going up. As a result of that, we've also attracted five or six different major manufacturers of these wind turbines. And the same could be true, I think, in the solar area for Iowa.
If you've just joined us, we have Joe Bolcom with us for the remainder of the hour. Just a few days ago, he returned from a bike trip across Slovenia in Central Europe. Several Iowans biking across Slovenia and doing it repeatedly over recent years to share awareness about clean energy, to exchange ideas, look at how Slovenia is doing it, Slovenians looking at how Iowans are doing it to see how we can learn. Now, if you'd like to join our conversation, you have a comment or a question for Joe Bolcom, perhaps you have a question about renewable energy, the development of renewable energy in Iowa, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Find us on Twitter, IPR Talk. So you're obviously impressed with the solar power advances that they've made in Slovenia there, and you kind of have a vision of how this might be contribute to our renewable energy picture here in Iowa. How does that translate to your work in the legislature?
Well,
how will you bring it there?
Yeah, there's certainly advocates for some sort of incentives to get this market moving. In fact, right now in Iowa, there's several different organizations doing workforce development with federal grant money and state assistance. We're training people right now by the dozens, really, to become installers of this technology. The challenge I think we have in Iowa is developing a market demand and, again, getting to this subsidy or this incentive that people would need to make this kind of investment. So I think there's policy work ahead to try and find some resources that would move this demand along. And it's been discussed the last couple of years in the legislature. I think at this point we just need to create a vision about the possibilities. I don't think most Iowans see much potential at this point in generating electricity where they use it, there at home or at their business. I think we need to paint a picture that people can see the possibilities of that.
Mm-hmm. Compare Iowa and Slovenia in terms of the climate, because, of course, when we talk about renewable energy, your climate, your landscape plays a big picture here.
Well, a couple of things. They're maybe a week ahead of us where summer's concerned. The gardens are looking great. The crops are looking great. A lot of really beautiful gardens. People grow a lot of vegetables and flowers. They're a big wine country as well. But as we talked about weather, one of the similarities also between us and Slovenia is they've also been experiencing some violent and extreme weather over the last few years. Not unlike some of the flooding we've seen here in Iowa and the tornadoes. They've had flooding. They've had tornadoes. They never have tornadoes apparently in Slovenia, and they had one 100-mile-an-hour wind. So their attention, like our attention, I think, has been drawn to what is going on out there vis-a-vis the change in our environment and weather patterns as a result of a changing climate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're concerned about that like we are.
Mm-hmm. And you got a chance to talk to ordinary Slovenians. I assume when you're biking through towns and cities, you meet people. Was there any language barrier? Were they English speakers? I don't know if you're you speak their language.
I don't speak Slovene. We had our host, Mladen Franko, Professor Franko, did some of the translation, but most people speak English. We visited a secondary school where English is taught as a second language in addition to Slovene, and actually a third language. So all the kids are learning English, and most places we were restaurants. In visiting with the various people we met with at the renewable energy facilities, government officials, and the like, but spoke English. So mm-hmm. They made it easy for us.
So in talking to Slovenians, how do they compare to us in terms of their concern about climate change and their concern about getting on a better energy footing than we are with fossil fuels right now?
Well, I think that the people that we met with that are involved in the planning and the implementation and the study on energy efficiency and renewable energy are pretty psyched about it. I would say there was some concern, not unlike here probably, about the urgency that people have about this issue. I think it's really important that policy is in place to help us all reduce energy consumption and make the right moves. It's hard for individuals to go about. Mm-hmm. Certainly people can save energy on their own, and they should. But what it drove home was the need for really good government policy to help us all as a group do better. And I think there's some concern that the climate issue has ebbed a little bit in terms of people's minds about the urgency.
Mm-hmm. Are there views of Americans, the typical view from their country? You said they drive a lot of little cars, as Europeans do, are generally more energy efficient than we are in America. Their view of us, that we all drive around Hummers and one person driving around in SUVs to go to and from work, things like that?
Well, we didn't get in much of that conversation about that. We did see maybe two or three SUVs in the entire country. but
their gas prices are a lot higher, aren't they?
Their gas price is about $6 a gallon. They have a lot of smaller cars. They've had recently a couple major freeways built in Slovenia, and the government officials we visited with were lamenting about them being already clogged up and a demand for more. And they see transportation as one of their major challenges, actually, in reducing greenhouse gases.
Iowa, of course, made tremendous strides in recent years in wind power. Europe continues to lead in wind power production. What can we learn from each other's work in wind power? What did you learn in Slovenia?
Well, Slovenia has had a kind of a rough initial start with wind. They don't have the same kind of wind resource we do in terms of large parts of the country having a good wind. And they had a lot of concerns from ornithologists and the bird organizations in Slovenia initially about the concern about bird deaths from running into turbine blades, so they kind of had a bad start, if you will, and have really done very little by way of wind, and mm-hmm. they're going to continue to try and look at that. But
did you paint the example of Iowa? And I think that's actually minimal to non-existent. The problem, the impact on wildlife, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think earlier there were issues in the early development, and in some places where they were sighted, they were in flyways of different migrating birds, and that was an issue. But that's not really been a substantial issue here, and we talked about that some. But I think they initially got off to kind of a bad start. The proposal was not well thought out, some of the environmental groups that cared about it spoke pretty loudly, and it kind of undermined the beginning of their industry. So they kind of made a bad first step and are trying to figure out how to regroup and put some wind in maybe offshore and places in places that make sense. There's some concern also about it's a very beautiful place, hilly, very wooded, 60% forest, about the visual pollution that some people thought that
right.
these machines might create.
Joe Bolcom is with us. If you just joined us, he's just returned from a trip across Slovenia on a bike with a group of Iowans sharing awareness about clean energy, 1-866-780-9100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you have a blog that you created about this little trip. If people would like to check it out on the web, they go to where?
They go to www.cgrer.uiowa.edu, or you could just Google CGRER and it'll get you right to our site.
I noticed on your blog you visited a unique pumped storage power plant on one of your last days. Interesting. Describe how that works.
So in Slovenia, they rely a lot on a couple of rivers that run through the country. They're very beautiful, but they use them to create power. And they also rely on a lot of nuclear power. So during the night, when demand for power is low, they use the nuclear power plant to produce energy to pump water up to this top of this mountain into this big concrete basin. And then during the day at noon when power demands are higher, they run the water back down through a tube, through a turbine, and it creates power. And so they actually get a net gain the energy that's essentially just rolling at night that isn't being used because you can't turn off a nuclear power plant very easily, is used to essentially pump the water uphill, and then during the day when they need a greater demand for power in the country, they let the water fall down through the turbines. And it's an amazing place. There are a number of places around the world that have these pump storage.
Is there anything like that in the United States?
Yeah, there are.
Mm-hmm.
There are.
It's pumped up, not in Iowa, I don't think.
No, we don't have any in
Iowa. We use traditional hydroelectric in many places around Iowa with rivers and so forth.
We have a very small amount of hydro actually in Iowa. But
now, of course, you were biking across the country. Bikes are thought of differently in Slovenia than here. We can also not only find new ways to create energy, renewable energy, but we can also use less energy. And one way of doing that is to use more bikes. You notice the bike culture there much different than ours.
Well, it is. And, you know, the cities are designed, all the major towns we were in and cities we were in, you roll up from the countryside and you're immediately met by a bike path or a bike lane that's striped and is well marked and has signals and gives riders a comfortable place and a safe place to get to work. And in Ljubljana especially, which is the nation's capital, there are hundreds of people moving around on bikes, people in business suits, young and old, and there's facilities along every street. We have some progress that we could make in that area, and especially in our urban areas, to see bicycles as a more viable form of getting from point A to point B to shopping.
For instance, where do you see progress being made?
Well, I think there's in Des Moines, for example, recently this was somewhat controversial, putting a bike lane on Ingersoll Avenue, which is a main drag through Des Moines. But they went ahead and did it, and I think it's probably working pretty well. Is one example. A number of cities have bike lanes something called sharrows, painting on the road to tell motorists and cyclists they should share the road. And we're doing some of that in Iowa City and Coralville. In Cedar Falls has a terrific trail system, Quad Cities. There's a lot of activity going on. But I do think that our city planners could probably learn a lot by traveling over to some of these European cities where bikes are a really, really important part of the transportation picture.
Mm-hmm. How much of changing the bike culture here to be more progressive in terms of conserving energy is about making laws? We often have discussions on our airwaves here about, you know, there's always that rub between the motorist and the bicyclist and who has right-of-way. Did I read on your blog that the right-of-way is almost always given to the bicyclist in Slovenia?
Yeah, we were met with two different worlds in Slovenia. On the highway, cars came extremely close to us, and the drivers seemed fairly adroit at that. When we got to town and you were crossing an intersection, cars would stop and we were riding in groups of six and eight and let everybody by. And the crosswalk was sacred for the bike and the pedestrian. That's a little bit more of a challenging concept here in Iowa, but. I think it's a lot of what can happen, it seems to me, can be decided by local government officials about how they plan their communities and how they provide facilities. And a lot of places are trying to do more with that, with wider sidewalks and the like. That's good. That'd be good for not only saving some gas, but getting in a little better physical shape.
Right,
as well.
And of course that has an impact, a knock-on impact to healthcare costs.
Exactly.
If you're in better shape, if you bike to work two or three times a week, you'll be in much better shape than sitting in a car, and you won't be burning all those fossil fuels either. We have a couple minutes left. What other highlights do you have to share with us?
Well, one of the things that we've made progress on here in Iowa is our energy efficiency programs. We spend about $100 million a year through our utility companies to help businesses and residents save energy in how they heat and cool their homes and light their buildings. And Slovenia is also trying to make some progress there. They just passed a new fee on consumers' utility bills to fund a program that would reduce heating costs in buildings.
Let's try to squeeze in a call toward the end of the hour. Tony is with us from Des Moines. Tony, we have just about a minute left. What would you like to share?
Sure. Thank you for taking the call. In the 70s, we had a nice energy crisis, and that was kind of a catalyst for the Europeans to decide that they didn't want to burn so much fossil fuels. And so France went on and did a lot of nuclear development, and Germany went out and did a lot of renewable development. The United States had the same crisis, but they didn't move on those same ideas. Do you think that we have to have a catalyst of a similar nature in order for the United States to, you know, put its act together?
Okay, Tony, thank you very much. We have just about a minute left for a response from Joe Bolkin.
Good question. Well, I think we've got a catalyst in many ways. It's happening in the Gulf of Mexico right now. I mean, the destruction of the Gulf as a result of trying to get some oil for our cars. I hope that the president takes this opportunity to really press Congress to pass an energy bill that focuses on a renewable future and a green future.
Do you see, even though the Gulf is a long way from us, that activating minds here on getting the politics in a certain way so that energy legislation could be enacted in Iowa, even though the Gulf is the catalyst?
I think that there's a lot of interest in continuing to make progress in Iowa, and whether the Gulf will make that happen or not, I think there's a lot of interest in getting to the next level here.
Okay, Joe Bolkum, thank you very much. We've run out of time. Joe Bolkum just back from a bike trip across Slovenia, and Iowans are biking across Slovenia, a group to share awareness about clean energy. Once again, that blog, if people would like to find out more details about your trip, Joe.
www.cgrer.uiowa.edu.
Okay, very good. The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt, Catherine Perkins, Lindsay Moon, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Julie Englander. And our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Friday.